As soon as I got to the store, I could tell that Farnum was excited about something and couldn't wait to tell me about it as he rested his hands on the counter in the back.
Howdy, Jim. You heard about what happened?
Well, I've heard about a lot of things that happened, Clyde. Which thing in particular are you talking about?
The train holdup.
Huh. Tell me about it.
It was over at Cougar Pass early this morning. A gang of bandits stopped the westbound not long after dawn.
How'd they do that?
Pried up a rail, then piled brush in front of the place and set it on fire. The engineer couldn't see the rail was gone, so he tried to barrel on through the bonfire.
Good Lord! Did the whole train derail?
No, just the engine and the coal car. The other cars buckled up some, but didn't crash. That was a stroke of luck, they say. The whole thing could have gone over. Not so lucky for the engineer and the fireman, though. They was both killed. Once the train was stopped, the bandits come charging in and tried to bust into the express car. From what I hear, there was a big money shipment in there. I reckon the outlaws must have known about it somehow. The Wells Fargo guards were waiting for them, though. There was a hell of a gun battle.
How you know all this?
Charlie Davenport and his wife were down in the county seat last night. They took their old maid daughter to town to put her on an eastbound train. She's going to visit relatives in Dallas and find herself a husband. Well, then they stayed the night and came back today. Stopped by here on the way to their place and told me all about it. It was the talk of the town. Anyway, one of the guards was wounded in all the shooting, but two of the bandits were killed, and the other four got away. The way I hear it, one of them was wounded.
They didn't get the money?
Nary a penny. Those guards are heroes, if you ask me.
What happened after the robbers lit out?
The conductor shinnied up a telegraph pole and cut in on the wire. He got help from the county seat. Sheriff Lester went charging out there with a posse, sent the wounded guard back to town, and took off after the bandits. It's the last time Charlie and his missus heard about it, so I don't know if they caught the varmints yet or not. The railroad shut down. They'll have to send a work train out, maybe all the way from San Antone. Wouldn't surprise me if they don't get the mess cleaned up until sometime tomorrow, maybe even the next day.
Well, I'm not planning on going anywhere, so won't cause me any problems.
I took the list I'd written out of my pocket.
I need a pound of coffee, some beans, a bag of rice.
I told him the rest of the supplies I needed, and he started gathering them up with a surly expression on his face. He would have rather gossiped some more about the train robbery than do any actual work. I'd heard enough about it, though, and it had stirred up some uncomfortable memories for me. I don't plan on apologizing for anything I've done in the past, and I learned a long time ago that regrets don't change a damn thing. But I didn't need any reminders, either. The whole thing stuck with me stubbornly on the ride back to the fish hook, and it didn't go away as I tended to the chores the rest of the day. When I laid down in the bed that night, sleep didn't come easy to me, like it usually does. I was finally about to doze off when... My first thought was that one of the horses had got out of the barn and was wandering around in the night. But I didn't rightly see how that could have happened, because I knew those stalls were solid and secure. So if it wasn't my horse, it had to belong to somebody else. Maybe it had wandered off from another ranch. Or maybe one of the Daughtry's mounts had found its way back to this area. I didn't care for that thought. I'm not given to flights of fancy, but for a split second I wondered if maybe a Daughtry ghost had come looking for me. I like that idea even less.
Oh, hell's bells, you've gone loco, old son.
I swung my legs out of bed and stuck my feet in my boots. Wearing the boots and a pair of long underwear, I picked up my rifle and went to the window to look out. The horse had come to a stop between the house and the barn and looked lost. It wasn't riderless, though. A dark shape hunched forward in the saddle, leaning over the horse's neck. I knew a hurt man when I saw one, even in a bad light. In those days, unless you were the sorriest no-account that there was, like the Daughtry's, when you saw somebody in trouble, you tried to lend a hand if you could. So I grabbed my hat off the peg, stuck it on my head, and went outside in my long johns to find out what was wrong. I wasn't careless about it, though. I took the Winchester with me.
Hola, amigo! You hurt?
He didn't say anything, but the horse turned its head toward the sound of my voice. I walked toward it, watching for any sign of a trap or an ambush. The horse shied away from me. The man in the saddle swayed back and forth like he was about to fall off, and I realized he might be unconscious. I knew a man could pass out and still manage to remain mounted. I'd done it myself a time or two.
Oh, boy. Whoa, easy there.
The horse danced farther away and the rider swayed even more. I could tell he was about to lose his balance. I jumped forward to catch him as he pitched out of the saddle. He was lucky I was there, and lucky as well that his foot didn't catch in the stirrup, because the horse ran off toward the barn. I was staggering a little under his weight, even though he was slender, because I was still holding the rifle at the same time. Hanging on to him was awkward. As carefully as I could, because I felt a sticky place on his shirt that had to be blood, I lowered him to the ground. His hat fell off as I did so, and in the light from a half moon that hung over the hills, I saw that his face was familiar. The last time I'd seen it was right here in front of the ranch house as I'd given him those wrapped up biscuits to keep him from starving. The young fella I'd been convinced was on the dodge had come back to the fish hook, and now he had at least one bullet hole in him. The first thing I did was straighten up and listen. Anytime you got a wounded man, there's a good chance somebody's chasing after him. I listened as hard as I could for the sound of rapid hoofbeats. And that was quiet, though. Could be he'd given the slip to whoever'd shot him. But just in case somebody who wasn't friendly might show up in the near future, I decided I'd better get him into the house. I placed the Winchester on the ground, then I bent and got my hands under the wounded man's arm. I lifted him, my back protesting some as I did so, and slung him over my left shoulder. I took him inside, balanced him precariously while I took the blanket from the bed and threw it on the sofa, and then lowered him onto it. He was out cold and never stirred or made a sound. I fetched in the rifle, hung it on the wall, and lit the lamp. The glow from it told me that the young fellow was still alive. His chest rose and fell in a shallow motion. His horse was still out there and needed to be dealt with. I left him there on the sofa and went outside again. After catching the horse and putting him in an empty stall in the barn, I stepped back inside and found myself looking down the barrel of a gun. My visitor had come to and rolled onto his side. He lacked the strength to get off the sofa, but he'd been able to pull a small revolver from his pocket.
Hey, you don't want to shoot me, son. I'm trying to help you. Why don't you put the gun down?
Where?
This is the Fish Hook Ranch. You stopped by here a while back, remember? You watered your horse and I gave you a cup of coffee and some biscuits. My name's Jim Strickland.
Stay back. I'll shoot.
I was getting a little disgusted. You try to help somebody and they point a gun at you? That's just not civilized behavior. I held out both hands and approached him slowly.
Now, just take it easy. Take it easy. I'm a friend. I won't hurt you, son.
I saw his eyes roll up in his head and knew he was about to pass out again. The gun sagged toward the floor, but as it did, his finger tightened on the trigger. I had to make a wild jump to keep from getting a toe shot off. The slug had smacked into the floorboards. A second later, the gun slipped from his fingers and hit the floor. I kicked it and sent it sliding well out of reach. Then I took hold of his arm and rolled him onto his back again. I wanted to get a look at that wound. He'd lost quite a bit of blood, but as soon as I peeled his shirt back, I saw that the injury wasn't serious, even though it probably hurt like blazes. A bullet had plowed an inch-deep furrow along his rib cage. I worried that he might have a cracked or broken rib in there, but if that was the case, it hadn't punctured a lung. He didn't have any bloody froth on his lips, and when I put my ear next to his mouth, I could tell that his breathing was normal. I didn't hear any wheezing or whistling as I would have if he'd had a hole in one of his lungs. I cut the blood-soaked shirt off him and used a whiskey-soaked rag to swab the blood away from the wound. The kid winced when the liquor bit into raw flesh, but didn't wake up. The gash was still oozing crimson when I bandaged it, but I could tell it was going to stop soon. With that done, I straightened up and thumbed my hat to the back of my head as I looked down at him. His cheeks were gaunt, and his dark hair was matted with sweat. I could tell he'd been on the run for a while. I knew the look well. I'd seen it gazing back at me from the mirror often enough.
Kid, what in the hell am I gonna do with you?
Couldn't stop thinking about what Clyde Farnham had told me about that attempted train robbery. It was thought that one of the outlaws had been wounded in the shootout with the Wells Fargo men. And now here was this youngster showing up with a bullet crease in his side. So if I wanted to look out for my own best interests, helping this kid was a damned fool thing to do. I knew that, but I also knew that I wasn't going to turn my back on him. The good Lord just hadn't made me that way. I whipped over to the table and blew out that light, knowing that I was too late. Whoever was out there would have seen the yellow glow in the windows already. But even so, there was no need for me to make things easier for him. Moving by feel in the darkness, I plucked the Winchester from its hooks on the wall near the door and waited.
Blow the house!
The windows opened from the middle like shutters. I eased one of them back a little. My eyes adjusted to the dark. From where I was, I could see two men on horseback. Judging by the sound of the hoofbeats I'd heard a few minutes earlier, at least one more man had ridden up with him. That meant he was unaccounted for, and I had a hunch he'd gone around to cover the back of the house. There was a window back there, but no door. What do you want?
We're looking for a friend of ours. Might have ridden in here a little while ago. Young fella, about 20 years old.
If he's a friend of yours, you ought to know for sure how old he is.
Never mind about that. You seen any strangers tonight?
Not a one.
You haven't heard a horse go by?
Nope.
Well, you wouldn't mind if we take a look around.
As a matter of fact, I would. I don't cotton to folks nosing around my place at night.
Mister, I don't really care what you cotton to. If our pard's here, we're gonna find him. You'd be wise not to try to stop him.
Being wise is something that nobody's ever accused me of. But I sure as hell got a Winchester pointed right at you. Rattle your hocks out of here while you still can.
Look here, amigo, we got off on the wrong foot. We're not hunting trouble. Our friend's hurt. We just want to help him, that's all. If he's here, we'll take him and go. You won't have to see any of us ever again.
I told you the fella you're looking for ain't here. And I'm not in the mood for company. So turn around and ride off.
They were just shadows in the dark to me. I couldn't see their faces. But I could tell from their attitudes they were torn about what to do. Then something tipped the scale. The third man hadn't gone around to the back after all. He was over at the barn.
Hey, Steve. Randy's horse is in one of those stalls. The yellow bastard's here, all right.
Both of them jerked guns from their holsters. I stuck the barrel of that Winchester through the window and cut loose my wolf.
Shit! Scatter!
The two men in the front of the house were already moving, but I was pretty sure I winged one of them. I saw him twist sideways in the sack. About then, bullets smashed the window and sent glass flying, and I had to duck. I rolled across the floor to the window on the other side of the door and came up on my knees. Instead of taking the time to open the window, I broke out the glass with my rifle barrel. One of the men was right in front of me, trying to get his horse back under control. The shooting had caused the animal to spook, and it was crow hopping around so that the rider had his hands full just staying in the saddle. I solved that problem for him by blowing him off the horse's back. As I shifted my aim and searched for the other men, I heard something smash through the rear window. Twisted around so that my back was against the wall, the man at the window opened fire, spraying bullets across the adobe wall above me as he triggered wild. I went flat on my belly, staying low, and aimed just above his muzzle flashes, firing three shots of my own as fast as I could work the Winchester's lever. The man stopped shooting and disappeared from the window. The door crashed open then, but the third man had sense enough not to just charge in blindly. Instead, he threw something in ahead of him. My eyes widened as I saw a stick of dynamite go bouncing across the floor with sparks flying from its burning fuse. I moved, diving toward the dynamite as it started to roll under the sofa where the wounded youngster still sprawled. I stuck out the Winchester and used the barrel to bat the red cylinder away from the sofa. The dynamite went spinning back through the open door, just as the spark on the fuse reached the blasting cap. It cracked the adobe wall and left a big hole in the front of the door. I climbed to my feet, and I felt my way over to the table where the lamp sat. I kept some matches there, and I lit one of them and held it above my head in my left hand while I pointed the Winchester in front of me with my right. When I stepped outside, the flickering light from the match barely reached a dark shape spread out on the ground about 10 feet from the house. I moved around the hole the dynamite had left and approached the figure. The man laid on his back, his feet kicking feebly as he pawed at his neck with his hands. He was trying to get a hold of a large, jagged splinter of wood that had lodged in his throat. The explosion must have sent it flying right at him. As I watched, he managed to pull it loose. That was a mistake. Blood poured from the wound. His feet scrabbled a frantic little dance in the dirt for a few seconds, and then he went limp. I knew he was dead, but I lowered the match close to his face anyway, and saw the glassiness that was spreading over his eyes. The match burned out. I went inside and used another one to light the lamp. Then I took it back out to check on the other two. They were dead as well. One in front of the house with half his face blown away, and the other at the back window with a couple of bullet holes in his chest. That just left the kid. When I went inside again, I was relieved to see that he was still alive. All that lead whistling around the room, and none of it had found him. He had to be leading a charmed life. In a way, I felt sorry for him. I knew the feeling of being untouchable, of believing that no matter how bad things got, somehow they were going to work out. And for a lot of years, that was exactly the way things happened. Until they didn't. And after that, nothing in my life was ever the same. Enjoy it while you can, kid. It won't last. And in the meantime, you left me a hell of a mess to clean up. I started by dragging the bodies into the barn and hoisting them onto the buckboard. The horses the three men had ridden in on were gone, having run off after their owners were shot. I'd probably be able to find them in the morning, I thought. Once I had the bodies loaded on the buckboard, I threw a piece of canvas over them and tied it down good. That would keep varmints away from them. That was really all I could do tonight. The damage to the house from the explosion would take several days to repair. Maybe as much as a week. I went back inside, found the pistol the kid had pointed at me, unloaded it, and stowed it away in Abner's trunk where the kid couldn't find it if he woke up. And then I took off my hat and boots, crawled back into bed, and went to sleep. Killing wore me out. When I woke up in the morning, the kid was trying to stand up, but he was too weak from losing all that blood to make it. He couldn't even sit up.
Shit.
He slumped back on the sofa before he knew I was awake. I'd been watching him with one hand on the Remington, which I'd slipped under my pillow the night before. I sat up.
Take it easy. You're not hurt that bad. But you're gonna need some rest while you're recuperating.
Who? Where,
Yeah, those are good questions. Why don't you answer the first one? What's your name?
Randall.
What'd you say?
Randall. Randall McClellan.
Pleased to meet you, Randy. I'm Jim Strickland. I introduced myself last night, but the shape you were in at the time, I sort of doubt that you recalled it. This is my place.
I know. I remember being here before. What I don't understand is how I got here now.
Well, your horse brought you. I reckon you passed out from being shot, but your horse kept going. Lucky for you that he did, too. I got the feeling that the hombres who were looking for you weren't real happy with you. Not much telling what they might have done if they'd caught up to you out on the prairie.
Tate? Is Tate here?
I don't know. There are three dead men out in the barn, but I didn't ask their names before I killed them. Seems like I remember that one of them was called Steve, though.
Steve Tate. You say he's dead?
Dead as can be. So are the other two.
Williams and Perkins.
Your partners in that train robbery.
How did you...
Now, hold on. You need some coffee and something to eat. Sooner we get some food in you, the sooner you'll start getting over being shot like that.
I got out of bed, pulled on some clothes, and began rustling some breakfast for us. I hadn't forgotten about those three corpses out in the barn, but I wanted to get things squared away with Randy first. When I had the coffee brewed and the bacon and the flapjacks were ready, I helped him sit up on the sofa and set a tray with a cup and a plate on it in his lap. After we had eaten, I would check that bandage on his side. He was still shaky, but he was strong enough to hold his own coffee cup and feed himself. I sat at the table to eat.
You fellas were the ones who tried to hold up that train, right?
It wasn't my idea. Tate came up with the plan. And he said we could make a fortune. I'd been drifting for a long time ever since my folks died, and I thought if I could make some money, everything would finally be all right again.
People tend to think that, all right. Most of the time, it don't work out that way, though.
Yeah, I'm starting to realize that. I didn't know at first he planned to derail the train. When I found out, I told him we shouldn't do it. Said we might kill a bunch of innocent people. You know what he did?
Nope.
He just laughed at me and said there aren't any innocent people, just them that have and them that don't. I was brand new to the gang. I couldn't stop him.
Well, you could have ridden away.
They would have killed me rather than risk me putting the law on their trail.
More than likely.
When things didn't work out just like Tate hoped, he said we'd have to charge in and kill the express messengers, but it wasn't just clerks in the express car. There were armed guards in there, too, and they opened fire on us before we could even start shooting at them. I squeezed off a few rounds. I couldn't take it anymore. I turned around and tried to get out of there, and he shot me himself. He was like a wild man, raving and cussing and shooting. I didn't think I'd get out of there alive, Mr. Strickland.
You probably didn't miss being dead by much. Why were they trying to track you down? I would have thought they'd be putting as many miles between them and Cougar Pass as they could.
I guess Tate didn't want me telling the law who they were. We wore bandanas over our faces, and everything was so mixed up because of the wreck and all the shooting, I didn't think anybody could have identified us later. And I think Tate was loco. I think he might have wanted to kill me just because I tried to run out on them. Williams and Perkins would have gone along with him on that. They were sort of scared of him.
What you're telling me all makes sense. But I got another question for you. You still have your heart set on being a train robber?
Well, I never set out to be a train robber. I told you. I just sort of fell in with those men, Mr. Strickland. I've done some things I'm not proud of. I've stolen to eat, stole money and food, both, but I didn't want to kill nobody.
All right, Randy. Here's what we're going to do. I'm going to change that bandage on your side, and then I'm taking those three dead outlaws to Largo and sending word to Sheriff Emil Lester about them. I'm going to tell the sheriff that they showed up here last night and tried to kill me and my new hired man so they could loot the place and steal some fresh horses.
New hired man? You mean me?
That's right. You signed up to work for the Fishhook spread yesterday morning, you understand? So there's no way you could have been anywhere near Cougar Pass when that locomotive went off the rails.
But...
Not only that, but you were wounded valiantly in the fight when we downed those owl hoots. As far as I'm concerned, you're a hero. And as soon as you can ride again, you've got a job here on the Fishhook for as long as you want it.
Why would you do that for me? You don't know me. You don't know anything about me.
Well, hell, son. I've been in some pretty desperate straits myself from time to time. I know what it feels like not to have any hope. And then somebody holds out a sliver of it, you grab onto it because there's nothing else you can do. Not if you're human. We're all weak now and again. That don't mean we don't deserve a second chance.
I can't believe it.
You better believe it, because it's the truth. There's only one thing you got to do for me right now.
What's that?
You got to give me your word you won't do anything stupid while I'm gone, like trying to get on a horse and ride away from here. You got to promise that you'll be here when I get back from town.
All right. I'll give you my word. I'll be here, Mr. Strickland.
Good. Finish your breakfast. You need to get your strength back as soon as you can. You're going to ride for the Fishhook brand. You're going to earn your keep, son.
Blood had soaked through the canvas in places, so I drew quite a bit of attention when I drove the buckboard into Largo late that morning with one of my saddle horses tied to the back. Farnham's store was the center of the community, so that's where I headed. Several men and even a couple of women followed me, forming a small crowd around the back of the buckboard as I stopped in front of the store, next to a Model T Ford somebody had parked there. I always saw a few automobiles every time I came into town, but bad roads and isolation meant most people out here still used horses and wagons. Tom Mulrooney, a burly fellow who owned the blacksmith shop, walked up to me.
What in tarnation do you have there, Mr. Strickland?
One of the women looked horrified. I didn't know her name, but I recalled that she was a seamstress and ran the millinery shop.
Is that blood?
Yes, ma'am. Now, you might want to step back there a little bit. I'm afraid what's under here would offend those with delicate sensibilities.
It's dead man, isn't it?
Yes, ma'am, it is.
Clyde Farnham came out on the porch of his store, drawn by the commotion in the street.
Good Lord, Jim, what you got there?
3 dead outlaws, Clyde. This is the rest of the gang that derailed the locomotive in Cougar Pass yesterday morning.
Oh.
I need somebody to take a ride down to the county seat and fetch back the sheriff, I guess. He's the one who ought to take charge of these bodies.
No need for that. The sheriff ain't there. He's right here in Largo.
Farnham pointed down the street to the settlement's only cafe.
He and the posse rode in a little while ago. They're down there getting something to eat before they start out on the trail again. Reckon now they won't have to.
I turned to ask if somebody in the crowd would be kind enough to let the sheriff know I needed to see him. I didn't have to voice the request. A couple of men were already hustling in that direction, and I knew good and well what their destination was. Sure enough, they went into the cafe, and less than a minute later, Sheriff Lester came out in a hurry, followed by a couple of his deputies. Folks got out of Lester's way. He came up to me, red-faced and glaring.
Strickland, what the hell is all this?
Just what I imagine you've already been told, Sheriff. I got the 3 outlaws who tried to hold up the train yesterday.
Now how in blazes do you know that?
Heard them say as much before the shooting started. One of them let it slip while they were dickering with me, trying to get me to trade them some fresh horses. I got a hunch they planned to kill me and my new hired man anyway, but once that business about the train robbery was out in the open, they didn't waste any time slapping leather.
They tried to kill you?
Yep. Things got pretty hot there for a while. We fought them off and managed to bring down all 3 of them, but Randy took a bullet in the side.
Who's Randy?
That new rider I hired, Randy McClellan.
I could tell the name didn't mean a blessed thing to Lester, and I was glad to see that. Lester gave me a curt nod.
Let's see him.
I had known Lester would want to take a look at them, so I was ready. I jerked loose a couple of knots and threw the canvas back far enough to reveal the faces of the dead men. The one I'd shot in the chest didn't look too bad, but the fellow who'd caught a couple slugs in the face was ugly as hell, of course. The one whose throat had been ripped open by that flying splinter didn't look much better.
According to Wells Fargo, 4 outlaws got away after that train robbery.
That's what I heard too, but these hombres were the only ones who showed up at my ranch. Wasn't one of them wounded in the fight with the guards? He probably didn't make it, and they left his body for the buzzards somewhere out there on the trail.
Yeah, you might be right about that. Cover him back up.
The crowd was probably disappointed, but I did what the sheriff told me.
There's no undertaker here in Largo. I'll have to take those bodies back to the county seat with me this afternoon. I'm commandeering your buckboard.
Yeah, I thought you might want to do that. That's why I brought along a horse to ride back to the ranch. You'll see to it the buckboard's returned to me. Won't you, Sheriff?
Yeah. You said that rider of yours was wounded. Well, why didn't you bring him with you if he needs medical attention?
He just got a bullet crease in his side. I cleaned and bandaged it. That's all the sawbones would have done.
Yeah. You'll have a reward coming for these men, Strickland. The railroad doesn't take kindly to being robbed.
I don't need any blood money. Randy and me were just trying to keep those varmints from ventilating us. I heard the engineer and the fireman were killed when the locomotive derailed.
That's right.
Now see to it that the reward money goes to their family, Sheriff. Can you do that?
If that's the way you want it, sure. I'll see to it, Strickland.
I'm obliged to you.
I went to the back of the buckboard and untied my horse.
Reckon I'll head on back out to the fishhook now.
Hold on. I didn't say I was through asking you questions yet.
What else you want to know, Sheriff? Those fellas tried to kill Randy and me. And we killed them instead. Whole thing's pretty doggone simple.
All right. I know where to find you if I need to talk to you again.
Yes, sir. You sure do.
I swung up into the saddle and lifted a hand in farewell. The townspeople got out of my way as I turned the horse. It wouldn't be long before the story spread and got bigger than it really was, I thought. 500 people would claim to have been in Largo the day I brought the bodies in. Instead of 25 or 30 who were really there. The number of corpses would grow from 3 men in a buckboard to a whole pile of dead outlaws in the back of a prairie schooner. The truth was never as good as a legend, I figured, as I rode away from Largo. Randy had kept his word to me. He was still there on the ranch when I rode in. He was dozing on the sofa, getting some of his strength back. The wound in his side was still raw and sore-looking when I changed the bandage that evening after supper. But I didn't see any of the telltale red streaks running away from it that would have told me it was festering. By the next morning, the crease was starting to look a little better. I cleaned it with whiskey again, and he was strong enough to cuss at some of the sting. Any man who's been on the drift for a while starts to feel restless if he has to stay in one place for very long. After a couple more days, I could tell that Randy was getting fiddle-footed again. He insisted that he was strong enough to get up and come to the supper table. And after we had eaten, I looked him square in the eye.
Don't forget we had a deal. I kept the law from coming after you for that train robbery. You agreed to stay here and work for me.
I haven't said anything about leaving, have I?
You didn't need to. I can see it in your eyes. And if you're bound and determined to do it, I won't stop you. But I can tell you right now, if you do, you stand a good chance of coming to a bad end. The West ain't like it used to be. There's no place for a horseback desperado anymore. The real bandits drive automobiles and live in cities now.
You sound like you're talking from experience.
Yeah, never you mind about that. Just take some advice from somebody who's older and, older anyway. If you want to make something of yourself, this is the place to start.
You sound like a preacher or a school teacher.
Son, if you knew how funny that was, you'd be laughing too.
I still don't know why you're doing this.
Well, hell, I don't know either. But just because I don't know why I'm doing something, it never stopped me before.
After a few more days, Randy insisted he was strong enough to go outside. He even offered to do a little light work around the place, but I wouldn't let him. The wound in his side had scabbed over and seemed to be healing just fine, but I didn't want him to break it open again. That might wind up wasting all my efforts so far. Winter seemed like it was over, but officially the seasons hadn't changed yet, and I knew how unpredictable Texas weather could be. I saw proof of it over the next few days, as some of them were sunny and warm enough to make a man break a sweat if he did any work outside, while others were overcast and cold, with a wind whipping down from the north that reminded me of the night I'd met Abner Tillotson. On one of the warmer days, Randy and I were in the barn when we'd heard horses coming. He'd pestered me so much, I'd finally given him some harness to mend, and I was wrestling with a rock that one of my saddle mounts had picked up in a shoe. I was trying to coax the pesky devil out with my clasp knife when Randy looked up from his chore.
Is that somebody?
Yeah, stay in here.
I closed my knife and slipped it back in my pocket. I was wearing the holstered Remington. I never went anywhere without a gun. When Randy started to get up from the stool where he'd been sitting and reached in his pocket for a pistol, I shook my head.
Stay here.
What if you need help?
Then you can come a-running.
I stepped out of the barn just as the three riders came to a stop in front of the house. Right away, I recognized Santiago Marquez and his cousins Javier and Fernando Gallardo.
Hola, amigos. Over here.
They turned their horses and rode over to the barn.
I see you are still here, Señor Strickland.
What? You didn't think the sheriff was going to drag me off to jail, did you, Santiago?
With the Sheriff Lester, it is hard to say what he might do. But I suppose you are right. He would not arrest the hero of Cougar Pass.
Good Lord! Is that what folks are calling me? Hell, I wasn't even there.
No, but you killed three of the outlaws who got away. You are a famous man, Señor.
Yeah, folks will forget all about me in a month's time. At least I hope they will. I'm just a simple, hard-working rancher, that's all.
And that is why we are here. It has been a week. Do you want to hire us to help with the spring roundup?
Yes, I do. I need a foreman, too, and the job's yours if you want it, Santiago.
Señor Tillotson always served as his own foreman.
That's fine, but it's been a while since I worked on a roundup. You and your cousins have your own ranch, right?
Si, much smaller than this one.
But keeping it running isn't that much different, I bet. You know what you're doing, and I trust you, Santiago.
You barely know me.
Well, I'm a good judge of character.
Santiago looked over at Javier and Fernando, They both shrugged. He looked at me again.
All right, senor. We will not let you down.
I don't expect you will. You won't have to do all the work yourself. I'll pitch in, and we'll have another hand, too. Randy, come on out here.
After a few seconds, Randy shuffled into sight. His right hand was in his jeans pocket, and I knew he was clutching that little pistol.
Randy, come here. I want you to meet the fellas you'll be working with. Fellas, this is Randy McClellan.
The one who helped to kill the outlaws. The one who was wounded.
That's right. Randy, meet Santiago Marquez and Javier and Fernando Gallardo. No offense, but I don't reckon I know which of you is Javier and which is Fernando.
Even that didn't prompt them to say anything. Santiago pointed at one.
Javier.
Then pointed at the other.
Fernando.
Seeing as how they were almost as like as the proverbial two peas in a pod, I wasn't sure how much that was going to help. Randy nodded. I was glad to see that he'd taken his hand out of his pocket, away from the gun.
Howdy.
Santiago's my foreman. And once you're able to work again, you'll be taking your orders from him.
I could work now. I can sit a saddle.
Give it another week. Then we'll see.
I looked at Santiago again.
So, what do we need to do to get ready for roundup?
You'll need a few more hombres. And a cook.
Where do I find a cook?
I would look in the saloon in Largo. There are old cowboys who come there to pass the time of day. And some of them hire out to the ranches around here during roundup. And there are young cowboys looking for work as well. I would say you need 3 more men.
All right. I'll go to Largo tomorrow and see who I can find. In the meantime...
We will start scouting out your range to see where all the cattle are. Some of them like to hide in the hills to the south.
That's just what I was about to say. You'll be here bright and early in the morning?
Bright and early, Senor Strickland.
They rode off, and Randy watched them go.
I hope you know what you're doing, boss. Those fellas look like bandits to me.
Trust me. I know bandits when I see them.
As it turned out, Randy, Santiago, and the Gallardo boys weren't the only newcomers to the fishhook. That night, Randy and I were in the house when we heard a commotion out in the barn. I had just checked the wound in his side and was pleased to see that it was still healing just fine, as far as I could tell. One of the windows I had replaced after the shootout with Tate and the other outlaws was open to let in some night breezes. And it let in the racket all the horses were kicking up, too.
Something is sure spooking those critters.
I stood up from the table. Randy started to get up, too, but I motioned him back into his chair.
No. Sit down. I'll check it out. No need for you to come along.
Damn it, Mr. Strickland. You don't let me do anything around here.
That's not true. You worked on mending that harness today. All right, come on. But if there's any shooting to be done, let me handle it. When that pop gun of yours goes off, the only safe place to be is behind you. And I ain't altogether certain of that.
I took the Winchester down from its pegs.
You plan on paying me wages?
What? Of course I do.
Well, when I've got my first month's wages, I'm going to Largo and buying me a decent revolver.
All right, fine. Until then, leave that gun you've got in your pocket.
We walked out of the house and headed for the barn, where the horses were still carrying on.
Better be careful. Must be some sort of varmint in there.
Yeah, wolf maybe. Or a bear.
I'm not sure there are any bears in this part of the country. More likely a coyote, maybe a panther.
You making fun of me saying there might be a bear, and then you start talking about panthers?
There are panthers around here. At least I think so.
Let's just go take a look.
We both stopped right where we were. The shape that stalked out of the shadows in a slow, menacing glide was big and shaggy.
Good Lord. Maybe it is a bear after all.
It don't move like a bear. It's too shaggy to be a panther. Randy, I think that's a dog.
Wolf, maybe?
Oh, I don't think so. The ears ain't right. Look how they sort of flop over. That's a big dog.
Maybe.
I'll prove it to you.
I took a step toward the critter.
Here, boy. Come on. Come on, fella.
The damn thing launched into a leap that sent it crashing into my chest. I went over backward and lost my grip on the Winchester when I hit the ground. The thing's hot, slobbery breath gusted against my face as its bared teeth poised just above my throat.
ready to rip it out. It didn't tear into me, though. Just kept me pinned there with 100 pounds of furry beast on my chest, while it snarled and drooled on me. I stayed as still as I could.
Don't move, Mr. Strickland. I'll get him.
Hold your fire. By God, don't you shoot that gun, Randy.
But Mr. Strickland, the dog.
The dog ain't done nothing so far but knock me down.
But
fetch the damn lamp. Randy hurried back into the house and returned a moment later with the lamp. He held it high so the light from it washed over us. I saw that I'd been right. The varmint wasn't a bear, a panther, or even a wolf. It was a dog. The shaggy brown hair that covered it couldn't hide how skinny he was either. He looked half starved, and I was surprised he hadn't tried to eat me for that reason alone. His muzzle had scars on it, as if he'd been in plenty of fights with other animals, and his big floppy ears were sort of ragged in places like his opponents had gnawed on them.
Now take it easy, old son. Nobody wants to hurt you.
He's gonna kill you, Mr. Strickland.
No, he's not. That's what he wanted to do, he would have done it already. He's just scared. Scared and hungry from the looks of him. Set that lamp on the ground and go get a biscuit.
What?
A biscuit. There were some left over at supper, remember? Go get one of them. Randy must have figured out I wanted to distract the dog, because he did like I said and hurried into the house. When he came back, he had one of the biscuits in his hand.
Now break off a piece and toss it over here next to us.
Randy fumbled with the biscuit. The dog kept his eyes on me, but I could tell he was interested in what Randy was doing.
Here you go, doggy.
He threw the piece of biscuit so hard it bounced off the dog's head instead of landing on the ground beside him. The dog jerked a little.
Not that hard.
Sorry.
Randy tried again, and this time the chunk of biscuit landed on the ground a couple of feet away from me and the dog. That finally made the dog take his eyes off me. He looked at the biscuit for a few seconds, then abruptly lunged for it. The slavering jaws snapped up the morsel.
Now, throw another. Closer to you this time.
Randy did, and the dog got off me entirely to go after. I rolled the other way as fast as I could and came up in a crouch. Right now, all the varmint wanted to do was gobble down the pieces of biscuit, including the first one Randy had thrown.
Give him the whole thing!
Randy threw the rest of the biscuit on the ground and started to back off.
You gonna get the rifle and shoot it now?
Shoot him? Why the hell would I want to shoot him?
Why? Because it's a wild beast, that's why.
Oh, he's just hungry. He's had a hard life. That's all that's wrong with him.
How do you know it's a he?
That was a good question. I just started thinking of the dog as male, maybe because he was so big and ugly. Sort of like some human galoots I've known. The dog had swallowed all the pieces of biscuit.
Go get him something else to eat.
What should I get?
I don't care. Just find something.
Randy retreated toward the house, afraid to turn his back on the dog. I held out a hand.
Easy there, big fella. Nobody's gonna hurt you here. You got my word on that.
He couldn't understand me, of course, but he gave me a long, wary, yet somehow hopeful look that almost made me think he did. Randy came back with a ham from the butcher counter at Farnham's. As soon as the dog caught a whiff of that, he came at Randy like a runaway freight train.
Throw it to him!
Randy threw the ham up into the air. It never even hit the ground. The dog went up and got it in those powerful jaws. Then he headed toward the barn with it.
That's a waste of a good ham.
Maybe not. Let's just see what happens. The dog trotted right into the barn carrying the ham.
Going back inside now. Take the lamp with you.
What are you gonna do?
I think I'll sit out here for a while.
Randy thought I was loco, but he did like I said, picking up the lamp and going inside the house with it. I sat down in one of the ladder back chairs in front of the house and tipped it back against the wall to wait. After a while, the dog came out of the barn again. He had the ham bone in his mouth. He'd torn all the meat off it. Once he was out in the open, he stopped and eyed me suspiciously.
That's your bone. I won't take it away from you.
He padded toward the house, but he didn't come all the way up to me. When he was still about 10 feet away, he laid down and started gnawing on that bone, keeping an eye on me at the same time. After half an hour, I let the chair ease back down on all four legs and stood up. The dog watched me,
but didn't growl or get up.
I'm going on inside now. I'll see you in the morning. Scar. I don't know where the name came from. Those scars on his muzzle, maybe. But I knew it seemed to fit him, just like I knew he was male. I also knew, or at least I hoped, that he would be there in the morning, too.
Where's the dog?
Out there, keeping an eye on the place for us.
Looking for a way to get in so he can kill us in our sleep, you mean?
Yeah, we'll see. Scar was still there in the morning, sleeping on the ground. He raised his head and looked at me when I came outside, but he didn't run off.
Howdy.
He laid his head back down on his paws, but he kept watching me. Randy stuck his head out the door behind me.
That beast really is still here. Thought for sure he'd run off during the night.
Nope. And it's safe for you to come out. He won't bother you if you don't bother him.
He's gonna chew my leg off.
Last night he might have, but I don't think he's quite that hungry anymore. Now that it was daylight and I could get a better look at him, I was able to confirm my impression that he was a boy dog, if you know what I mean. I could also tell how rough life had treated him. He had patches of bare hide where something had ripped out his hair, and it hadn't grown back.
I'm riding to Largo this morning to see about hiring a cook and some more hands, the way Santiago said. You and Scar can stay here and keep an eye on the place.
You leave me here with that thing?
The two of you will get along just fine. Randy looked sort of doubtful about that. And to tell the truth, so did Scar. But I had work to do, and the two of them would just have to learn to tolerate each other. I saddled up one of the horses and headed for town. I hadn't been to Largo since taking in the bodies of the dead outlaws, so I hoped Sheriff Lester had brought my buckboard back by now. It was still early enough when I got to town that I didn't figure I'd want to hire anybody I found in the saloon at that hour. I wouldn't be able to depend on somebody who had a thirst for rot gut at 10 o'clock in the morning. So I went into the store instead. A big, fancy car was parked in front of the place. When I went in, I found Clyde Farnham talking to a fella in a city suit and hat.
Howdy, Jim. Can you believe it? I'm thinking about putting in one of those newfangled gasoline pumps.
You mean that stuff that makes the automobiles go?
That's right. If I do, then folks hereabouts won't have to go all the way to the county seat to buy it.
I'm Morris Dobbs, sir. I represent Continental Oil.
Howdy. Jim Strickland.
Oh, yeah, Jim. Your buckboard's parked out back. A couple of deputies brought it back a few days ago. I told them they ought to just take it on out to your ranch. But they said the sheriff told them to deliver it here. Said this is where they got it, and this is where they were bringing it back.
That's fine, Clyde. I'm obliged to you for looking after it.
If you had a car, Mr. Strickland, you wouldn't need a buckboard.
I'm not sure a car would go everywhere I need to go. And if I had one, I'd be a sure enough menace to society. Because I've never been very good at piloting one of those blasted things.
It just takes practice, that's all. Did you see my Hupmobile out there?
Is that what you called it?
It's the latest model. I'll take you for a spin, if you like. Even let you try your hand at driving it.
No thanks. A horse is plenty good enough for me.
It's no use trying to fight the future, Mr. Strickland. Why, in a few more years, as the roads improve, you're going to see automobiles everywhere. Even in ranching country like this. Trucks can carry goods where the railroads don't go, and do it much more cheaply and efficiently than horse-drawn wagons. Wouldn't you like to be able to stock your store that way, Mr. Farnham?
Well, it does sound like it'd be a whole heap easier.
You sound so proud of the things, Mr. Dobbs. If I didn't know better, I'd say you made them.
No, but I sell the stuff they run on. The whole world is going to run on oil and gas one of these days, Mr. Strickland. You mark my words.
Well, I'll leave you fellas to your business. Now, I'll be back later to pick up that wagon, Clyde. I suppose the team's down at Mulrooney's?
Yep. See you, Jim.
Goodbye, Mr. Strickland. Don't forget what I told you.
No, sir. I'm not likely to.
Since it was still too early to go to the saloon, I stopped at the cafe instead and lingered for a couple of hours over several cups of coffee and a second breakfast. Anybody who's damn near starved to death in the past, like I have, knows that it's a good idea to take advantage of every opportunity to eat. By the time I went into the saloon, it was almost noon, late enough that the fellas along the bar wouldn't be necessarily hopeless drunks. Maybe. I'd seen half a dozen horses tied up outside, and that was how many men were leaning on the hardwood bar that ran along the right-hand wall. They weren't all together, though. Four men stood at the nearer end of the bar, while the other two were down at the far end. In addition, two more men sat at one of the tables scattered to the left of the entrance. One of them had dealt himself a hand of solitaire, while the other was reading a newspaper and nursing a beer. There was everybody in the room, except for a sleepy-looking bartender with a soup strainer mustache, an unruly thatch of brown hair, and big enough bags under his eyes to stuff a cat into.
You ready for another?
Don't mind if I do!
Yeah, I bet you don't!
The four men closest to me were sharing a bottle of rot gut, passing it back and forth to fill their glasses, then tossing back the drinks. From the sound of their voices, they'd been at it for a while. I was pretty sure that wasn't their first bottle of the day. They were young and dressed like cowboys, and might have been good at the job for all I know. But they looked and sounded like troublemakers, too. So I walked on past them toward the two men at the end of the bar. They were young, too, but a lot quieter and more subdued than the other bunch. One was big, but round and soft-looking at the same time. He had a moon face under a tip-back hat with a high, round crown. His partner was a short redhead with an innocent, freckled face. Neither of them looked like they had much experience with cows, but if they were willing to work, that shouldn't matter. Santiago knew what he was doing, and they could learn from him. They glanced at me when I stepped up to the bar.
Howdy, fellas.
How you doing, mister?
Why, just fine, son. How about you?
All right, I guess.
Something wrong?
No, not really. It's just that, you see, me and my friend here, we're sort of low on funds.
Well, shoot. I'd be glad to buy you a drink.
Oh, no, sir. We ain't beggars. We don't look for charity, and we don't take it.
Buying a man a drink ain't what I call charity. It's just being friendly.
Well, in that case...
I signaled to the bartender, and he ambled down to us.
Bring these boys another round.
He filled up beer mugs and slid them across the hardwood. The two youngsters drank thirstily, but not like they were desperate for it.
We're obliged to you, mister.
We sure are. My name's Bert, by the way, and my pard's Vince.
Glad to make your acquaintance. I'm Jim Strickland. You fellas wouldn't happen to be looking for work, would you?
I could tell by the way their eyes lit up that they were. I liked the way they looked even more eager for a job than they were for a drink.
If you're looking for men to ride for you, mister, you shouldn't be asking those two. They're nothing but wet behind the ears calves. You should hire yourself some real men like us.
Look, fellas, I need a couple of hombres who ain't afraid of a little hard work.
Didn't you hear me, mister? I told you, those two are worthless. Nothing but a couple of dime novel cowboys.
It's true. We could sure use jobs, Mr. Strickland. But I reckon that fella's right. We don't know much about cowboying. The fact of the matter is, we've never really been ranch hands.
What have you done?
We worked at the train station in the county seat. Vince's pa got us the job. He works for the railroad.
Well, what did you do there?
You're looking at a couple of broom pushers, Mr. Strickland.
Honest work's nothing to be ashamed of. How come you're up here in Largo?
We thought it was time to move on. We wanted to do something different, something exciting.
A hand fell on my shoulder.
I was talking to you, mister, and I don't like being ignored.
When that liquored-up young hellion grabbed me, I just did what came natural to me. I turned around and busted him in the snoot. The impact sent him reeling back toward his friends. He stumbled and probably would have fallen if one of them hadn't grabbed him.
Get that son of a bitch!
His pards charged toward him.
Hey, you boys, take it outside!
Looking back on it now, throwing that punch was probably a dumb thing to do. I was outnumbered 4-1. But suddenly it was 4-3 as Bert and Vince stepped up beside me. The fact that they were siding me when they barely knew me already told me something about them. Vince Between me and Vince, we managed to subdue three of them polecats. Bert was pinned up against the bar, though, and the man he was fighting pounded him mercilessly. I was about to step in and give Bert a hand when something suddenly seemed to change. He drove forward and wrapped his arms around the fella, forcing him backward. The man tripped and went down, landing on his back with Bert crashing down on top of him. I knew Bert had just broken one of the man's ribs. As the man began to writhe on the floor, I reached down and got hold of Bert's shirt collar.
Come on, Mad Dog, get off him. He ain't interested in fighting anymore.
I couldn't have lifted Bert like that if he hadn't cooperated, but he was willing to get to his feet.
I didn't mean to hurt him. I swear I didn't. I just lost my head.
Oh, I wouldn't worry about that too much, old son. Because he was sure as hell trying to hurt you. Now, about those jobs.
The loud-mouthed cowboy who had started the trouble was sitting on the floor, slumped back against a table as he clutched his upper right arm. Blood welled between his fingers. A gun lay on the floor beside him. Over at the table where the two older men sat, the one who'd been reading the newspaper had put it aside. He had a Colt in his hand instead, with the butt resting on top of the table. A thread of smoke curled from the weapon's muzzle. It was obvious to me what had happened.
I'm much obliged to you, mister.
I never did cut into back shooters. Young Wild West there figured he'd plug you while you weren't looking, since he couldn't beat you any other way.
He lifted the gun, pulled the hammer back a little, and blew the rest of the smoke out of the cylinder. I grinned. It was just the sort of dramatic flourish I might have done myself in that situation. I sensed a kindred spirit.
Dadgummit, now you're just showing off. Shooting a fellow is fine, but you don't have to make a production of it.
I turned to the one man who was getting on his feet.
You're gonna have a hard time dragging your friends out of here, son. But I suspect they could all use some medical attention.
Never mind about that. I don't want this trash cluttering up my place, so I'll go get some help. There are always a few men playing dominoes in the Oddfellas Hall above the drugstore.
As he came out from behind the bar, he pointed at the hombre who'd fired the shot.
I'm counting on you to keep an eye on the place for me until I get back, Enoch.
You can count on me, Dick.
The bartender, who was evidently also the proprietor, hustled out. The smaller of the two old-timers, who had dealt himself another hand of solitaire sometime during the ruckus, kept playing. His companion stood up, pouched his iron, and came over to me and the two youngsters who wanted to be cowboys.
Enoch Cole, the bashful card-playing one yonder is Gabe Wolverton.
I ain't bashful. I just don't see any point in flapping my gums all the time like some people.
Glad to meet you, Enoch. Jim Strickland.
I shook hands with Enoch. He was a good 10 years older than me, maybe more. His hair under a black Stetson was mostly silver and white with a few black strands still in it. He was tall and skinny enough. He looked like he wouldn't weigh 100 pounds soaking wet, although I was sure he actually did weigh more than that. He had a loose-jointed way of moving, and I could tell by looking at him that he was made of rawhide, wang leather, and steel. Gabe was about the same age, shorter and stockier, with a close-cropped white beard.
This is Bert and Vince. Don't reckon I know their last handles yet, but I'll have to since they're fixing to hire on to ride for the fishhook spread.
I'm Vince Porter. Bert's last name is Chadwick.
Pleased to meet you, boys. So, you're gonna ride for the fishhook, are you?
Well, I guess so. Do you really want to hire us, Mr. Strickland?
I wouldn't have asked you if I didn't mean it.
But we don't have any experience as cowboys. Like that loudmouth said, you'd be better off hiring him and his friends.
Not hardly. I need fellas who ain't afraid of a little hard work. Fellas who can be depended on. You can both ride, can't you?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You know how to handle a lasso?
Well, not really.
You can learn. A man who keeps his eyes open and is willing to try can learn just about anything.
We'll do our best if you want us.
That's all I can ask. You wouldn't happen to know anybody who can cook, do you?
I can cook.
Is that so?
Been told my biscuits is edible and my stew ain't bad.
He's telling the truth.
You wouldn't happen to be a top hand, would you?
I know which end of a horse is which.
And both of you happen to be out of work.
Well, we drifted this way figuring that the spreads hereabouts would be hiring for spring roundup soon. We've been grubline riders for so long, we don't really know anything else.
Well, according to my foreman, I do need one more man.
Then you're lucky. Got everybody you need right here in one room.
That was a stroke of luck. Along with Randy, Santiago, and the Gallardo brothers, they gave me 7 punchers and a biscuit shooter. It seemed like enough to get the job done. Then the bartender came back with several loafers from the Oddfellows Hall. They dragged out the losers from the recent brawl and left them on the saloon's front porch. There was no doctor in Largo, so they'd have to wait until they were able to ride before seeking medical attention. But at least they wouldn't be cluttering up the saloon anymore.
If you fellas want to, you can ride on out to the fish hook with me in a little while and move into the bunkhouse. I got one more errand to run, but I'll be ready to leave in about 15 or 20 minutes.
We'll be ready to go.
Bert and Vince nodded. Gabe put a black 4 on a red 5 and never looked up. But at least he didn't object.